But basically, as I understand it, and talking to some of the old fellas, they found it very difficult because what it meant was that one day you were an amateur team, a club, next day you were a professional. And so you had to get all your professional players signed up as quickly as you could before somebody else nicked them. But you didn't know how much to pay them, you didn't know how much you could afford, you didn't know, so it was really difficult. And
nor did they, of
course. Nor did they. And so they got into a lot of trouble. And meanwhile, Rob Andrew, who had been given an open checkbook, was whizzing around these clubs, cherry-picking the players, the best players. And that's why Newcastle had that dream team that won after in the second season. But it was an exciting time. It really was an exciting time. And the reason, you know, the little stories, I remember when Tom had said, "Are you interested in coming down?" And I said, "Yes, I'd like to have a chat to you." "Right, meet me Thursday at Twickenham. Meet me near those two pillars with the lions on the top. I'll see you there at 2 o'clock." So I was there at about 1:30, and I was standing by the thing, and then nobody turned up, and so I sat on the bench looking for the car coming in the car park. Nothing. I thought, "Oh, what's happened here?" 5 minutes later, a helicopter arrives in the car park, and I was watching it just out of interest, thinking, you know, I've not been this close to a helicopter before. And he trots out the car park, comes over, says, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Great." He said, "So you're interested in coming to Gloucester?" And I said, "I am." He said, "Right." And I remember he tore off the corner of a foolscap piece of paper and wrote some numbers on it and said, "Right, here we go." He asked me how much I was earning. I told him. He wrote some numbers on a thing. He said, "I'm willing to give you this. Call me on Monday. Make your mind up and call me on Monday." And he shook my hand and jumped in the helicopter and took off. So I thought, well, this seems like it's going to be fun. So I accepted the job. But what was exciting is he had deep pockets. He was very enthusiastic. He wanted to prove to the world how it should be done, how a rugby club should be run, and should be run, and how to win trophies. And I thought, this sounds really exciting. So I think it's worth a bash. Initially, we always thought that if we could get 5 years out of this job, it would really suit us. And it's been 13.
Can you tell us about Tom Walkinshaw, the man?
Yeah, Tom was a real creative. He was the most creative person I've ever met. Sometimes you had to listen to his creativity, because sometimes you'd think it's complete nonsense. But you had to listen, because 8 times out of 10 it was nonsense. But 2 times out of 10 it was incredible. And you would look at it and you'd just say, "It's nonsense." But when it did come off, it was outstanding. Some of the ideas and some of the vision that he had. And I always said, if you line 100 guys up in a row and gave them all a task, 99 of them will approach the task and come out with fairly much the same answer. And I'd be one of those 99. Tom would be over there somewhere. And you'd look at him, look at his answer, and you think, that is complete nuts. You know, he must be smoking something. But a couple of times out of time, they would be things of brilliance. And that's why you always had to take him seriously. He was a taskmaster. He would want things done. He'd want them done now. If you said, "Great, I'll get that done tomorrow morning," it would know. If there was a way of doing it now, it had to be done now. He would ring me if he was in Australia. He wouldn't think twice about ringing me at 12:30 at night, and he wouldn't apologise. He'd just simply say, "What's going on there?" And he would also, if he wasn't happy with something, he would verbally beat you up in front of others, so you had to defend yourself. And you know, he was somebody that would take it as well. You know, and if you said to him, "Tom, that's complete nonsense. You know, I don't like what you're inferring, and it's unacceptable," he'd accept it. And so we would have a number of battles. But I once said to him, we were out away, and he said to me, he didn't often get into his sort of personal life very much. You'd get snippets, and he liked to keep all that private. But he once said to me, when we were having dinner at a match, it was actually when we were playing Northern Ireland,
Ulster.
We were having dinner after the match, and he said, how do you describe me when people ask you what I'm like? And I said, Tom, you're a racing car driver, you're in the middle of traffic, there's five cars around you, and you know that in a split second, if you can do a move and you go, you'll win the race. But equally, if you get it wrong, you're dead. You don't even think about it. You just go for it. Whereas me, I say, forget that. I knock it down a couple of gears. I think I want to race next week. And I said, you're on the edge all the time like this. You're balancing on the edge, and I'm back here pulling you back, and you're pulling me forward when we're doing that. And probably one of the only three compliments I got from him in his life, my working time with him, his response to that was, that's probably why we work well together.
And what were the other two?
We had a good year of performance, and he said, you should be very pleased with what you've achieved here, which shocked me. And the other one, it was half a compliment, and it didn't really mean to be a compliment because he didn't do compliments.
Yeah. What did he want you to do when you came to Gloucester?
He wanted, and on my CV, there's an all-embracing sentence that says, to achieve a trophy-winning team and to be financially viable. So he basically wanted the team to win trophies, but to be viable financially. And that is a very difficult formula in sport, because they're almost direct opposites. Because to win trophies, you've got to have the best team. The best team costs you the most money. If you're spending lots of money on your team, the business behind it's got to be peddling like mad. And there are very few sports teams that are successful and make money.
This has been Worcester's problem, hasn't it?
Worcester's
really?
Problem.
They haven't known quite where to go as far as...
They're losing 2 million a year.
Yeah.
And they should be one of the top teams.
Yeah.
There's no question. Geographically, they're perfectly placed. Mm. They're right on the edge of the motorway. They've got a nice, huge catchment. Got the Birmingham catchment. Mm. You know, they've got some history. You know, they should be doing far better than that. Mm. But they're losing 2 million a year.
Mm. Yeah. Well, they had very good facilities from a very early stage,
yeah,
didn't they?
They did.
Professional rugby.
Yeah.
But it was getting the balance right, wasn't it, between team and investment?
Absolutely right.